Collaborative businesses are on the rise, and this is the Collaborative Business Podcast, a podcast that will help you find answers and provides useful insights to the best ways of working together in partnerships, alliances, and many other kind of business-to-business collaboration. Here's your host, Peter Simoons.
Episode 12. Welcome. Today, I'm in conversation with Kim Tremblay. We're diving into a different aspect of collaboration, and then that is the aspect of alliance marketing. Kim is already working in that field in an international environment since about early 2000. As you will hear in the introduction, she's quite modest about her own accomplishments, but when you also will hear in the conversation that she knows very well what she's talking about. Kim, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Peter.
So, for our listeners, who is Kim Tremblay?
So, Kim Tremblay, I am an alliance marketer. I have been specializing in alliance marketing and partner marketing since around 2000. So, I'd like to say that I have a little bit of expertise in the area. I've been working with really mainly the big IT partners, so some big names that you might know in the IT industry. I'm also a mom, and I like to think I do a little bit in social media as well.
Okay, a little bit. We will dive into that a little bit later to see how little it is or how extensive it is.
Okay.
Now, interesting that you already mentioned the marketing piece, and I heard the word alliance and partner combined. Mm-hmm. What is for you an alliance?
So our company has a very strict definition of alliance. So the term alliance may vary from company to company, but for us, it implies a very strong collaboration across multiple areas of the business. So we're a global company with operations in over 130 countries, over 150,000 people. So an alliance in one area of our business may not be considered a global alliance for our company. We like to look at partnerships that span across multiple areas of our business that contribute a considerable amount of revenue. Mm-hmm. And there has to be, obviously, it has to be a two-sided relationship. So we need to put research and R&D money aside. We have to have people assigned to the alliance, as well as marketing dollars. So we have kind of a strict definition here, but it may vary from company to company.
Yeah. And you sketched the size of the company. You didn't name the company yet. Is that something you would like to do?
Absolutely. So I'm with Schneider Electric. We're a global specialist in energy management. And we are really remaking ourselves from an industrial company to a high-tech company. So we're spending a lot of money in research and development and in developing our own software, which is requiring us to do a lot of partnerships as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the one side, you say your own software, and the other side, you combine it in one sentence with partnerships. Can you explain a little bit more there?
Absolutely. So, you know, we realize that even though we are a very strong global company, we might not always have the competencies inside to do the work ourselves. So if we find that partnering would be the best option, because a specific partner may already have those competencies, it may be a better idea for us to do that than to create it on our own. So we really follow a build, partner, buy strategy. Whereas, you know, we might build it on our own, we might buy the competency by acquiring another company, or there may be somebody out there just doing it in a world-class way that we would prefer to partner with.
Okay, I understand. Yeah. And how have you organized the alliances within Schneider?
So the alliances within Schneider sit in our business units. So nearly every business unit inside the company has an alliance competency, whether it's one alliance manager for one alliance or whether it's an alliance team.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a VP of alliance strategy that manages that portfolio and the alliance process that sits in the corporate strategy group, as well as myself and my team that sits in the global marketing group. So we are sprinkled throughout our business, and we're hoping that that will encourage really an alliance DNA in our company.
And with the risk of making an assumption, but you the role of your team in creating that alliance DNA, I can imagine that it is quite important.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, we're specialists in marketing and communications.
Mm-hmm.
So we work with our alliance teams across the business to ensure that we have a really comprehensive internal communications plan for who are our alliances, why should people care about them, and what is it that they should be doing in their countries to support the alliances. So we use internal communications tools like an intranet to communicate that. We film videos to explain things to our teams. And then we use an internal tool that's much like a Facebook, where we keep real-time information flowing about our alliances, and we're building a community there. So that's my team's role in really building that alliance DNA.
Yeah, I understand. And do you also have a role to the outside, to the partners in communication?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
So we are part of the core team that manages the alliance. We have an alliance manager who really looks after the workflow and the work streams and that primary alliance relationship. And our team is brought in prior to a joint solution being developed to complement their work with the marketing strategy. And then once a joint solution is created, we obviously then work with the marketing teams of our alliance partners to do the joint marketing plan. And then once again, we bring it back to our internal teams around the globe, whether it's with our global businesses or our country level businesses, to make sure that it gets executed. So we're much of a quarterback in that respect.
Yeah.
When we come back to the internal teams.
Now, you hear often that alliance managers spend a lot of their time internally. I hear you talk about internal versus external.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear in general the figures, often people say, well, I spent about 70% of my time internally. Is there a same need to spend more time internally for you, or is it balanced in a certain way?
I would say the bigger the company, the more time you need to spend internally.
Yeah, I recognize
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so I would agree with that 70-30.
Yeah.
For sure. I think the easiest part is creating the alignment with the partner, and then the hard work is creating the alignment internally to make the alliance successful.
Yeah. And so now we come to your little bit of social media you mentioned in the introduction.
Yes. I think that's where you found me, Peter.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. And that's already a while ago, before we met at the ASAP conferences.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the fact that you are in alliance marketing since 2000, mm-hmm. You've seen develop the whole role of social media. What has it changed? Because in 2000, well, there was, maybe when we look back, we can see some sites that we would call nowadays social media, but definitely the role was different at that time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What has it changed for you?
I would say that it has made our role in alliance marketing much easier, because when you're pairing two highly visible brands into the marketplace with something that's very formal, like an ad or a press release, you can imagine that the process behind that on both sides is very lengthy, and the legal constraints make it difficult to execute on that joint marketing plan. Whereas social media has opened up a whole new world to us, because it's a lot of personal opinion. It can be more real time. And very, very few approvals compared to some of the more traditional things that we would have had in our marketing plans. So it has given us the ability to communicate a lot more quickly and with more frequency about our alliances.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have to always be careful and gauge your partner's reaction depending on their corporate culture. So we have partners with whom we would never write a blog without getting it approved by multiple layers in their organizations, just because we know that that's how they work, and we wouldn't want to go against their process. We have other partners who everybody in the company is writing blogs, and so they wouldn't hold it against us if we're writing a blog about our alliances. So you have to just be very careful looking at the corporate cultures and treat them how you would like to be treated.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my golden rule in alliance marketing, is we really look at, you know, would we care if this blog was written about us? If not, then we can go for it quickly. But if it's something that we think, well, maybe our partner would like a heads up on this, or would like input on this, we certainly seek out their input and approval.
Okay, I understand. But the way you balance it, depending on the partner and their way of working,
mm-hmm.
Is similar to the way you would work as an alliance manager with your partner. And especially when you have more partners, you will work differently with one partner than you will work with another.
Right.
Also adjusting it to the culture and to the way they work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So is there an alliance you've been involved in that was for you the best learning experience and that taught you the most that you would like to share?
Wow, we've learned so much from all of them. So I don't know that I can pick out one over the other. And I I've been doing this a number of years, and I have to say, I just was on a series of phone calls this morning with an alliance partner where I learned a lot. so I don't think you ever stop learning in alliances.
I agree.
But you know, one of the things that I learned early on, and it still haunts me today if I don't do it right or if my team doesn't do it right, is to make sure that you have the right people engaged who can make decisions and who are helping to define the project or the rules of engagement.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where we get in trouble. I mean, as alliance managers, as alliance marketing, we have great imaginations and we have really skilled people on our alliance teams. And we can come up with some really great plans. But if the right people in your organizations aren't involved up front, those plans will go nowhere. And so I think that's something that I've learned the most about over the years, and it continues to be a challenge for me. Because a lot of times the partner does think they have the right people in the room. Then when it comes down to getting approvals, they start to bring in other folks in their organization, and it really sets us back.
Yeah.
So that would be one bit of guidance that I would offer I've learned over the years.
Is that easier with smaller partners than it is with equally sized large companies?
In my experience, yes. Yes. And, you know, I came up from the company, the APC brand. So
yeah.
APC was an acquisition of Schneider Electric in 2007. And we were the small partner back then.
Yeah.
And now we are on equal footing, I would say, with most of our partners, or we're the large partner in the relationship. So I've seen it from both sides, and I would say from the big company perspective, it's much easier to work with the smaller partners. They're very happy to promote our brand and to attach to our brand and work in the way that we're accustomed to working. I think when you get the two big brands together, it becomes more difficult because brand standards are very well defined. Both companies want their place in the limelight equally, and or one wants to be ahead of the other. And so there's a lot of negotiation that goes back and forth.
So the larger the partner, the more complex the project will be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or at least
and more people involved.
At least a communication project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And more people involved. And you said the right people on board early on. Then you also talk about executive sponsorship.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's a critical factor. And I would say on both sides. And not just someone, executive sponsor in name only, but someone that you can escalate issues to, who is empowered to make decisions and who will act quickly in working with the partner to resolve any conflicts with the partner or internally. Because a lot of the roadblocks also come internally as well. Mm-hmm.
So one other question then comes to mind. How far do you involve senior management and executive sponsors in your social media communication?
That's a good question. We, as an organization, have been working hard to get our senior executives to participate more in social media in general. Mm-hmm. So I, with that caveat, we have not had them as involved as we would like in social media. But we are getting at least the VP level alliance VPs, alliance strategy VPs, involved in regular blogging, regular responding to our alliance communications. But it is a goal of ours to get the senior executives involved, because that's when the organization starts to change, when they see that the senior executives and the exec sponsors are really promoting what we're doing as an alliance. Then you see a sea change happen inside of the organization.
Then it's lead by example. And then the organization always follows faster than when it has to go bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I recognize.
So we have a recent example where we submitted one of our alliance programs for a big internal award here, and the internal awards are all done on an intranet type platform where people can see the submission, people can comment on the submission. So we did a bit of a campaign internally to get the exec sponsors to read and review and comment and rate our project as part of this internal awards campaign, to show people that it's not just the alliance team that cares about this, that it really is important to the company.
Excellent.
But it does, you know, that kind of thing doesn't happen on its own. You have to handhold a bit and tell them where to go, where to click.
Yeah.
And in general, what you want them to say.
Yeah,
and the same thing goes with social media, right? People think that, oh, you know, somebody just writes an off-the-cuff tweet. But a lot of times we have a very detailed plan about when we're going to tweet, what we're going to tweet about, who we're going to mention, so that they find that information and push it out to their audience as well. So, you know, that's how we work inside of Schneider Electric with our alliances.
Interesting. Do you also schedule the tweets based on target audience and time zones and that kind of things?
I would say that most of our tweets on our social media are event-driven,
yeah,
meaning we have a launch of a new solution where we're going to have a press release, or perhaps there's a big trade show or event that we're participating in with our partner. So we target the attendees of those events, or we target Twitter handles and LinkedIn groups that we think would be interested in that new solution.
Yeah.
I would say that we need to get better at targeting, because the social media world is so vast now that one size doesn't fit all.
No.
And I think we all need to get a better understanding of that.
And that probably is a continuous process, because the moment you are better at targeting, something has changed in social media that you will need to improve again.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's why I say, you know, I dabble in social media. I don't think I'm an expert, because I'm definitely not on top of all the latest and greatest trends. We have a lot of people here at Schneider Electric who are, that I ask guidance from quite frequently.
Okay. So you are in alliance marketing since 2000. Is there a moment for yourself when you look back that you realize that in alliance, working in alliances is better or more fun for you personally than working as a company by yourself?
Oh my goodness. Well, you know, I have always enjoyed working with partners and customers. So I had a background in marketing and communications, went into sales and really enjoyed the interaction with the customer, did some channel marketing. And, you know, the more I got into the partner marketing, the happier I was. And I think that the reason it makes me happy is because it's always a new challenge. It is not a one-size-fits-all, as I was discussing earlier. You know, it depends on your partner and the way that they work as to how you're going to work. So I'm a person that tends to get bored doing the same thing over and over. And for sure, it has not been the same thing over and over every day. Every day is a new opportunity, a new challenge. And that keeps me excited and engaged. So I don't know if there was any one specific moment, but you know, as I moved from a purely inwardly focused role to customer focused roles and then to partner focused roles, I realized that that was what made me happy personally.
Yeah. Great.
And I think I've selected people on my team that feel the same way. So we're all driven in that same way. I think in alliance managers as well, we tend to have, I don't know, a little bit of ADD in us, I guess.
Well, and that's good that no single alliance is the same. There is such a quote like, have you seen one alliance? You've seen one alliance. And that's what I personally also like about it. So every client has different alliances and every situation is different, but you still can add based on the experience from previous alliances and apply it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you already shared one recommendation, but when companies or people are entering into an alliance, what will be your number one recommendation for them?
So my number one recommendation would be to ensure that you have executive sponsorship up front. Beyond that, I would say to very clearly document who is going to do what. So your teams, document your teams, who will engage with who, so that everyone is on the same page, and that you have people paired with the right people in your organization. I think a very clear governance process on, you know, how you plan to work together and what you will prioritize. And I'm sorry, but everything is not a priority. You know, in a company as large as ours, we have alliances where we have, you know, as many as 10 work streams, and they're not all as important as the others. So one of the complaints that my alliance marketing team has sometimes is, you know, this gets to us and everything's a priority. Well, you know, I think that needs to be laid out up front what you're going to focus on. Because, you know, you're not going to be good at everything that you do together. So pick the three things that you want to get accomplished. And a lot of the smaller projects will happen on their own without as much focus.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not even a great recommendation. It's a great set of recommendations you give.
Thanks.
So normally I ask for if there is a book about alliances that you would like to recommend. But in your case, I'd like to broaden the question a little bit. Is there a book about alliances or about social media that you would like to recommend to the listener?
Oof, I really don't have a book on social media for alliances that I would recommend. You know, I've attended a lot of conferences and social media summits, and that's helped me to get a jump on it. But, you know, I'm just constantly reading the Twitter streams and finding people to follow where I'm getting the latest trends on social media and, you know, doing my best to implement that.
And that by itself already seems to become a trend when I ask it to my guests, because to a lesser extent, people are reading books. At least my guests are.
That's right. I mean, yeah, it's been a while. I read Steve Steinhilber's book on alliances. Steve is from Cisco.
Yeah.
And he kind of, he did write the book on alliances, and we use that as training here inside of Schneider Electric. And then the Strategic Alliance magazine from ASAP is something that you can always find on my desk, and it's one of the first things that I like to read. But more and more, we're reading blogs and keeping up with things online.
Yeah. Well, the two that you mentioned are the two that I always recommend, because this, especially the Steinhilber one, is a very good book in the sense that it gives a good overview, is an easy read, and gives an excellent entrance into the world of strategic alliances and how large companies deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Without being it an excellent academic work that's not readable. So mm-hmm. this is also a good theory in there and good readable.
Mm-hmm. But I would say that more and more alliance partners and Cisco, Steve Steinhilber, obviously, he comes from Cisco, they're working toward more of alliance portfolio management.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it used to be companies would have one, two, or three alliances, no more than that. But as the world changes, where we have companies that are developing apps, perhaps, that fit into what we do, or they might be small technology partnerships, but they're really critical to filling a gap in your product or solution portfolio. We need to become better at really managing this portfolio of alliances. So I'm suspecting that maybe Steve will have another book coming out in the future on that.
Interesting. So, Kim, where can people find more about you? And all the details that you will mention, I will include them in the show notes. So.
Sure, absolutely. So I can be found on LinkedIn. I'm a regular contributor to the Association of Strategic Alliance Professionals group on LinkedIn, as well as Schneider Electric Intelligent Energy. And I'm on Twitter at Kim D. Tremblay.
Okay, and I assume that Schneider is also on Twitter?
Yes, at Schneider Elec.
Elec, and that's where Twitter cuts off the amount of letters allowed for a username.
That's right.
Yeah.
We actually have multiple Twitter handles depending on the audience, but Schneider Elec is our corporate handle, and since our alliances are corporate, that's the one you'll find me using the most. We also have Schneider NA, which is our North America handle, so anything that's specific to a market like Schneider ME for the Middle East, you'll see that we use those.
Okay. Well, we'll include those in the show notes, as mentioned. So is there anything you would like to mention to our listeners that we have not yet discussed?
You know, I guess one more word of wisdom with alliance partners is, as alliance managers, we tend to be very optimistic people. I think if we weren't, we would get kind of depressed about this profession because it's very difficult to push things through these big companies sometimes. And I think that we have a tendency to see everything as bright and rosy, and we promise a lot to our partners. My biggest recommendation is to, you know, under-promise and over-deliver, whether that be on timelines, or what your company is capable of. It just goes along with, you know, being very honest with your partner and treating them the way you would like to be treated. I have found that that makes for a much more successful relationship.
Well, I was smiling all the way during this recommendation, so I
that's a simple one. I think that really alliances do come down to a lot of those interpersonal skills, by treating people the way you want to be treated, and just telling people the truth about where your company stands. Your relationship is going to be much more fruitful than giving them the really rosy picture.
Yeah. Well, I like it. Thank you very much, Kim, for being a guest in today's episode and shedding a light on how social media helps you in Schneider in alliances.
Great. Well, I really appreciate your having me, Peter. This was fun.
Well, I think that was a quite interesting conversation about alliance marketing. As usual, all the details are in the show notes, and you will find them at simoons.com/episode12. Next week, we will be back with a special about mobile and collaboration. Until then, bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Collaborative Business Podcast. For more insights about business collaboration, partnerships, and alliances, hop over to www.cmoons.com.